For the record, I think you're wrong. That child has had a claim on you since the day you laid eyes on her. But I get why you're afraid. So what's the other development, if I dare ask?
I slept with Wade.
Missy nearly choked on her margarita.
Wait, what? When did this happen?
2 nights ago, when we got back from Retta's.
He went with you to West Virginia?
Yes, another long story. But one thing led to another, and he ended up staying the night. Because I asked him to. Missy was leaning forward in her chair, grinning like a schoolgirl.
I knew it. I knew you were holding out on me. So spill. Was it amazing?
Christy Lynn struggled to keep her face neutral and to remind herself that ending things with Wade before they went any further had been the right thing to do.
Yes, it was amazing. But there's nothing to spill.
I told him I made a mistake, that I wasn't ready for anything beyond friendship. And maybe not even that.
Oh, Christy Lynn, please tell me you didn't.
I had to. He wants more. And maybe I do too, but I don't know how to be that.
That being
a couple, half of someone else.
Missy sighed. You were married for 8 years.
That was different. I didn't need Stephen in my pocket, and he certainly didn't want me in his. In fact, there were times when he seemed to forget I was there at all. And I really didn't mind. It worked for a while. And then, obviously, it stopped working.
I don't think I could bear that again. Not with Wade.
Are you saying you want Wade in your pocket?
No.
Maybe. I don't know.
Talk to me, Christy Lynn. What's going on in that head of yours?
I don't know what's going on. He's a good man, a good friend, a good listener. He brings toys for Tolstoy and leaves spaghetti in my microwave because he thinks I need looking after.
Missy groaned, then drained her glass.
Tell me, please, how any of this is bad.
It's bad because I'm starting to depend on him more than I want to.
You're scared.
Yes, and realistic.
Doors, Missy said, staring woefully at her empty margarita glass.
You get that, right? That you're slamming doors on your chances for happiness?
Christy Lynn nodded somberly as Marco approached with their nachos. I do, actually. Though I prefer to think of them as loose ends, and tying them up is the only way I know to protect the people I care about.
Tolstoy came running as Christy Lynn stepped through the door, squalling insistently as she went to the kitchen to fill his bowl, then rescued one of his catnip mice from under the fridge. She had just retrieved her purse from the counter when she spotted the note she'd left for Wade crumpled on the kitchen table. She picked it up and dropped it into the trash without rereading it.
Slamming doors.
Maybe Missy was right, but it was for the best. Wade had already been hurt by one woman who didn't know how to love him. He didn't need another one.
And there was Retta.
Tomorrow she was going to have to pick up the phone and make Retta understand that adopting Iris was impossible. She'd be only too happy to help place her with a good family and to provide whatever financial support was needed for them both. But that's where it had to end. For her sake, as well as Iris's. She took a quick shower to scrub away the aroma of Taco Loco, then brewed a cup of Dar's valerian root tea. She needed sleep desperately, preferably the dreamless kind. But when she stepped into the bedroom, Wade's manuscript was waiting for her on the nightstand, another loose end that needed tying up. She had promised to finish it, and she owed him that much. Whether he would bother reading her notes was another story. But at least her conscience would be clear. The light was still on, the comforter scattered with manuscript pages, when her cell jarred her awake several hours later. She squinted at the clock as she fumbled for her phone. It was after midnight.
Hello?
Christy Lynn? For a moment, she thought she must be dreaming.
Mama?
I'm sorry, it's so late.
Is something wrong?
No. Look, I know I said I wasn't going to call,
and I really wasn't. But then I found the card you left on the coffee table.
There was a pause, the sound of smoke being inhaled and then exhaled.
After you left, I got to thinking about, well, about everything. And I realized, I never said I'm sorry. I may have said the words, I can't remember. But if I did, I meant I was sorry for me. It wasn't about you, about how I hurt you, and it should have been. That's why I'm calling.
Christy Lynn sagged back against the pillows, wondering where this fresh wave of contrition was coming from and where it might be going. A few hours ago, her mother had shown her the door. Now this. Had she changed her mind about the money after all?
It doesn't matter now, Mama.
Yes, it does. And there was more I should have said. So much more.
I always swore that if I ever got the chance, I'd make sure you knew how much I regretted it all. And then there you were, right in front of me, with that necklace in your hand, and all I could think about was getting rid of you. That's why I rushed you out the door, because I was ashamed. I could see what I'd done to you, then and now.
Christy Lynn said nothing, letting the silence stretch.
Christy Lynn, I'm here. The thing I should have said, the thing I need to say now, is that I hope you find a way to be happy. I'm sorry I never gave you the kind of life you deserved. Sorry I broke my promise to you. Sorry about all of it. But please, baby girl, don't let that stop you from making a life of your own.
Mama, I have to hang up now. I'm at the payphone on the corner, and I don't want Roger to wake up and find me gone.
There was a brief pause, then a jagged breath. I promised myself I'd never ask you for another thing, including forgiveness. But I'm breaking that promise now and asking you for one thing. Please, Christy Lynn, let yourself be happy. And then she was gone.
Christy Lynn stared at the blank phone screen, imagining Charlene Parker standing in her house dress at the corner payphone, not to ask for money as she had initially suspected, but for forgiveness, and to wish her happiness.
I could see what I'd done to you, then and now.
The words seemed to echo in her head, and her heart. Was she such an open book? So glaringly transparent that her mother, a woman she hadn't seen in 20 years, could see through all the careful layers of veneer to the emptiness beneath. It was a daunting thought, particularly when others seemed to be echoing similar sentiments. It was time to let herself be happy, to stop closing doors, to make a life of her own. It must look so easy from the outside. From the foot of the bed, Tolstoy eyed her quizzically, stretched out like a pasha amid the strewn manuscript pages. She'd managed to get through the last page before passing out. Now, as she began gathering them up, she realized she'd probably never know how the story ended, unless the end of known things wound up on a shelf in her store one day. She hoped it would. It was certainly good enough, or had the potential to be. The house was still as she padded to the kitchen with her empty mug, the quiet like a shadow stalking her down the hall. On her way back to bed, she lingered in front of the closed door to the spare room, hand poised above the knob. All the things we won't let ourselves have. The door seemed to open of its own volition. It hadn't, of course. Doors didn't open on their own. You had to choose to open them, to consciously cross the threshold and glimpse what lay beyond. She flipped on the overhead light, sighing as she scanned the jumble of half-packed boxes and unused furniture she should have donated months ago. But then it wasn't like she had a real use for the room. Maybe that's why she'd been dragging her feet, because she didn't like the idea of it sitting empty, like a great big glaring hole in her life. On impulse, she dropped to her knees and began picking through the nearest box. They were Carol's things mostly. Items hastily left behind when she moved to Florida. Lamps, linens, chipped dishes. She'd held on to most of it, in case Carol changed her mind and wanted it sent. But she hadn't. Maybe because she'd already taken the things that mattered. Conspicuously absent from the boxed-up cast-offs was any trace of personal memorabilia. No scrapbooks, photographs, or family keepsakes. Nothing that represented Carol Boyer's real life. Those things she'd been careful to take. Now, as she thought back to the night she left Clear Harbor, it struck her that the only things she'd been careful to take were an old photograph and a tarnished necklace. That's what she'd chosen to hold on to. Reminders of pain and loss, because there were no happy memories to cherish. She hadn't bothered making any. Instead, she'd built a careful life, with nothing to look back on, and even less to look forward to. The tears came then, like a dam giving way after a storm, as Wade's words, Missy's words, even her mother's words crowded in on her. It was a moment of terrible clarity, the kind that usually came at the start of the third act, while there was still time for the heroine to save herself. Sadly, that train had left the station. There was already a big hole in her life. But if she was being honest, and it was well past time for that, she had to acknowledge that the empty places in her life were of her own making. Not her mother's, not Stephen's, hers. She'd been living in a kind of bubble, playing it safe while the world went by. But somewhere along the way, that had stopped working. She wanted more. Was it too late to change? To salvage something after all the lost years? She honestly didn't know. She only knew she wanted to try. And she knew exactly which door to open first. 47. Sweetwater, Virginia, September 10th, 2017. Christy Lynn dropped into the deck chair with her phone and her coffee mug, sipping as she checked her messages. So much had happened in the past couple of weeks, so many things she needed to share with Wade. Though things on that front didn't look particularly promising. They hadn't spoken in weeks, since the morning she'd left him in her bed to drive to Walterboro, and he had completely stopped coming to the store. Not that she blamed him after the way she'd left it. She'd been very convincing when she said they'd made a mistake. In fact, she had almost convinced herself. But the truth was she missed him. His smile, his sometimes harsh but always well-meaning advice, his presence in her kitchen, and her life. She had tried his cell several times, but the calls always went straight to voicemail. Either he'd shut off his phone, or he was purposely declining her calls. Finally, she'd sent him a text. Finished the manuscript. Was wondering how to get my notes to you. It had taken him 2 days to respond. His tone had been distant, even for a text. Out of town. Don't know how long. I'll let you know. She had replied immediately. I've made some decisions. Can we talk? He hadn't bothered to respond. Now, as she sat watching Sweetwater Creek tumble smoothly past its bank, it occurred to her that some people might be meant to simply pass through a person's life, to touch briefly, and then move on. Perhaps that's why she and Wade had crossed paths again after so many years. He had been her fresh set of eyes, a new lens through which to see herself, and perhaps rewrite her life. And now that she had, or was at least trying to, he had moved on. She stood, turning her back to the creek, and carried her mug inside to the sink. She had things to do. A final run of boxes to drop off at Goodwill, the borrowed ladder to return to Hank, the vintage lamp she was having rewired to pick up from the shop. 2 hours later, Christy Lynn's errands were complete, and she was on her way home, eager to put the final touches on her first-ever DIY project. Her heart skittered when she pulled into the driveway and saw Wade's Jeep. He was sitting inside, with the engine turned off, scribbling in one of the leather journals he always carried with him. He set the journal aside when he saw her approach, but said nothing, his expression unreadable. "Hi." He nodded curtly.
"Hello."
"I didn't expect to see you. I wasn't sure where you'd gone."
"I went to see my mother for her birthday and decided to stay a while. I needed to clear my head."
Christy Lynn wasn't sure she wanted to know what clearing his head might mean. "I have the notes on the rest of the manuscript."
"Yes, I got your text."
"I wasn't sure you had. I didn't hear back after the last one."
"No."
"Why?"
"I thought it best. I wasn't sure I was coming back, and I didn't want to confuse things."
The news that he'd even considered not coming back to Sweetwater made Christy Lynn's stomach knot. "But you did come back. You're here." He eyed her coolly, fingers drumming on the steering wheel.
"At some point you have to stop running, don't you? And you still have my manuscript."
"Right. It's inside. Do you want to come in?"
"I'll wait out here."
His abrupt refusal stung. "All right. I'll just be a minute." Christy Lynn was more than a little shaken as she unlocked the front door. She was hoping there would be a conversation, a chance to apologize, to explain. But he'd made it abundantly clear that he wasn't interested in apologies or explanations. She hurried to retrieve the manuscript and notes from her nightstand, then started back down the hall, wanting him gone before she made a complete fool of herself. She wasn't expecting to find him standing in the living room, holding Tolstoy.
"You left the door open," he explained,
setting the cat down on the arm of the love seat.
"He was about to stage a prison break."
"Thanks." She handed him the pages and stepped back, not trusting herself to stand too close. "I hope the notes help, but feel free to ignore every word if you don't agree. It has to be yours, or it won't work." He glanced briefly at the pages before tucking them under his arm.
"Thank you. I'd be happy to pay you."
The chilly response felt like a slap. "I didn't do it for money. I did it for you." Wade shifted uncomfortably.
"I better get going."
"Wait. Can I show you something? It'll only take a minute." His eyes slid to the door, and she saw that he was about to say no. "Please?" He nodded, turning to follow her down the hall. Paint fumes wafted out as Christy Lynn threw open the door to the spare room. Wade stepped inside, pivoting in a slow circle.
"It's pink."
"Yes." She couldn't help smiling as she surveyed her handiwork, the pink walls and white canopy bed, the delicate rosebuds stenciled in each of the four corners. It had taken her nearly 2 weeks to finish, far longer than it would have taken Hank. But it had been important that she decorate Iris's room herself. He looked at her, clearly stunned.
"You said yes?"
"I did."
"I guess a lot's changed in 2 weeks. Did this change of heart have anything to do with seeing your mother?"
Christy Lynn looked down at her hands, scraping at the specks of pink paint still clinging to her nails. "It had to do with a lot of things. But I think it's been coming for a while. I started realizing how empty my life has been, and how much I stood to lose if I kept on playing it safe."
"It's a big step."
"Yes," she said gravely. "It is. But there are worse things than being afraid, like hurting people you care about, and being alone." She stood there, waiting for some sign that Wade understood. Instead, he turned away, feigning interest in the wall stenciling.
"So, when's the big day?"
"I don't have an exact date. I had to hire an adoption lawyer to draw up the papers. It's a little more complicated than setting up a trust, but they should be ready soon. And it took some doing, but I've finally convinced Retta to move to an assisted living facility Missy recommended here in town. I told her the only way I'd agree to take Iris was if she came too. I hated to resort to blackmail, but I really wanted her out of Riddlesville. She's getting to the point where she'll need looking after, and at Pine Brook, she'll have nursing care and still be able to see Iris whenever she wants.
No trouble from Ray?
None. It seems the good reverend has lost interest in his niece. Wade smiled dryly.
Surprise, surprise.
I have you to thank for that, she said softly. You knew he was going to be trouble.
Journalistic instincts, he said,
running a hand over the freshly painted bookshelf near the window.
This is nice. Did you do it?
Christy Lynn nodded, beaming just a little. My first attempt at furniture refinishing. Picking the books was fun, too. I loved books when I was a kid. I hope Iris will, too. Wade reshelved a copy of Green Eggs and Ham and forced a smile.
Well, it looks like it's all going to work out. I'm happy for you. And for Iris.
She panicked as he turned to go. He was still so angry, and he had every right to be, but she couldn't just let him walk out. I was wondering... The words seemed to stick in her throat. I was hoping you'd come with me when I go pick up Iris. He was scowling when he turned back.
I thought you said Ray had lost interest.
It isn't Ray, it's... She felt him stiffen when she touched his arm, but held on until he had no choice but to look at her. I don't want to do this alone, Wade. I know what I said before, about being better off on my own, but I was wrong. I want you in my life. Wade's face went coolly and carefully blank.
I'm not interested in being your wingman anymore, Christy Lynn. I tried that, and it didn't end well.
She dropped her hand from his arm and moved to the window, peering out through the crisp eyelet curtains she had hung last night. She'd been rehearsing this moment for weeks, not sure she'd ever get a chance to say what was in her heart, and now that the moment had finally come, she found herself tongue-tied, on the brink of losing the man who, against all odds, had found his way into her heart. Why couldn't she just say it? I want you. I love you. Wade was still in the doorway, still waiting for some kind of response, though the chill in his gaze told her he wasn't going to wait much longer. She needed to say something, anything, because if she didn't, she would never get another chance. Do you remember when we talked about what Missy said? About our nevers being the doors we keep closed? Wade shrugged, the barest of acknowledgments. He was going to make her work for this, and she supposed, after everything, that was only fair. Anyway, I've been doing a lot of thinking, and I realized she was right. Being a mother was one of my nevers, because I was afraid I'd get it wrong. But that isn't the only door I've been keeping shut. There were others. Like letting myself love someone, and letting myself be loved. And then you came along, and I was so scared that I did get it wrong. But I don't want to get it wrong anymore. I want to figure out how to get it right. With you. He was standing with his arms crossed now, his face still carefully blank.
So that's it. Just like that, you're ready to turn over a new leaf.
Christy Lynn took a step forward, then checked herself. It isn't just like that, Wade. I've been thinking about this for a while. You made me think about it. And I know now that it's what I want. That you're what I want. His face became a blur as her eyes filled. She blinked away the tears. I can't lose you. There wasn't a chink in Wade's frosty facade.
You'll forgive me for being skeptical.
She wiped at her eyes again. Please,
I know I hurt you, and you have every right to be skeptical, but you have to know it wasn't on purpose. I do know that. I also know it won't be on purpose next time. And there will be a next time, if I let myself believe you.
You're wrong, Christy Lynn shot back, closing the distance between them in two quick strides. Yes, I ran, because it's what I've always done. But it was because you were trying to make me see things I didn't want to see. She dropped her eyes to the floor, her throat thick with a fresh rush of tears. I just didn't see them until it was too late. She was startled when she felt his fingers under her chin, tilting her head back until she was forced to meet his gaze.
It doesn't have to be too late, Christy Lynn. Not if you really mean what you're saying. I told you once that I'd wait, but I have to know, for sure this time. Do you want this? Do you want us?
Christy Lynn dipped her head, afraid to trust her voice.
Yes, she whispered. I do.
But I warned you once, I might not be worth the wait.
And I told you I'd risk it.
Even if I'm still scared. He pulled her close, his lips feather light as he touched them to her forehead.
Especially if you're scared.
His words were like honey, slow and warm and unbearably sweet.
I can be brave enough for the both of us, until you get good at it.
How do you know I will?
Because you finally decided to. And because the woman I know is much too strong to let a little thing like being loved scare her for long. You're going to get good at it, Christy Lynn. I promise. In fact, something tells me you're going to get very good at it.
He kissed her then, so slowly and thoroughly that she felt herself sway against him. It was the delicious surprise of it that made her head swim, the rightness of their bodies melding together, like two halves of the same perfect whole. She was ready. After years of running, of hiding, of punishing herself, she was ready to let herself be happy. But there was something they hadn't discussed. She pulled away briefly, looking up at him through damp, spiky lashes. In the interest of full disclosure, I need to inform you that I'm now a package deal. I come with a little girl. Wade grinned broadly as he dragged her back against his chest.
And a cat, he murmured against her mouth. Don't forget the cat.
48. Riddlesville, West Virginia, October 15th, 2017. Christy Lynn glanced at Wade as he pulled the Rover into Retta's drive and cut the engine. He must have felt her gaze because he turned and reached for her hand.
Ready?
She pulled in a deep breath, the kind kids took before hurling themselves into the deep end of the pool.
I think so.
Wade gave her fingers a squeeze.
You are, I promise.
Retta was at the door before they made it to the porch steps. She looked frailer than the last time Christy Lynn had seen her, her eyes rimmed with shadows, her face worn. Inside the door, a pair of battered green suitcases waited, along with a pink fleece jacket and Iris's beloved Teddy. A child's life, stuffed into two avocado green Samsonite cases. The sight brought a sharp pang of memory, of other moving days, of strange beds and new schools, of having to start all over, again. She must be terrified. Wade followed the direction of her gaze.
It's okay, he said softly. This is good. It's right.
Christy Lynn nodded, noting a trio of half-packed boxes in the middle of the living room floor. Retta had been packing, picking and choosing which things to take with her to Pine Brook and which to leave behind. She was glad to see it. Part of her had been afraid she might change her mind at the last minute. Christy Lynn nodded at the boxes.
You've been busy?
Retta's faded blue eyes moved wearily around the room full of knickknacks, as if wondering where it had all come from.
I'm leaving more than I'm taking. They say I won't even need to bring dishes to the new place. I should be able to finish boxing the things I want by the time you come back.
She paused, making another scan of the living room.
I still can't believe I'm leaving this place. I always thought I'd die right here in this house.
Christy Lynn had no trouble believing that.
Will you miss it?
Retta mulled the question a moment, lips pursed thoughtfully.
I'll be sad to leave Honey all alone in that cemetery, she said finally. She always hated this town, and now she'll never get out. But Iris will, and I'm glad of that. She deserves better than the little bit I could give her.
Where is Iris? Christy Lynn asked, imagining her hiding somewhere, sobbing her heart out.
She's in her room. I sent her to check her closet one last time, trying to keep her busy.
She paused, gathering a shaky breath, then called down the hall.
Iris, honey, it's time to go.
Christy Lynn cringed, wondering what those words must sound like to a 3-year-old who was about to be yanked up by the roots, torn from the only home she'd ever known.
How is she? Is she upset?
Retta's lips thinned.
There were some tears when I first told her, but she settled down when she realized she'd be living with you, her angel mama.
Retta loved the nickname, and apparently Iris did too, but it still made Christy Lynn uncomfortable. It wasn't an easy name to live up to, especially for someone with no maternal skills whatsoever.
Retta reached for her hand, her smile teary. Don't you worry. She's young, and young hearts mend. A year from now, she won't remember this place, and you'll be her mama for real.
Christy Lynn felt the butterflies in her stomach stir to life. She knows you'll be nearby, though, right? That she can see you whenever she wants?
Yes, but not too much at first, I think. Having me around in the beginning would only confuse her. That's why I wanted to wait a bit before coming. She needs to get settled in, to know her place is with you now.
Before Christy Lynn could protest, Iris appeared, wearing the sparkly pink sneakers she had brought her the last time she visited. Her eyes went wide when she spotted Wade and Christy Lynn.
Baby, Retta said gently, can you say hello?
Iris mouthed the word soundlessly, her gaze locked on Christy Lynn. Retta bent down and smoothed Iris's blonde curls, her gnarled hands skimming over the child's hair, face, shoulders, as if trying to memorize the feel of her.
Are you ready to go on a nice long car trip, like we talked about, all the way to Virginia?
It took a moment, but Iris finally nodded. Retta reached for her hand, leading her across the living room to where Christy Lynn stood.
And you're going to be a big girl for Nani, aren't you?
She asked, with a sudden catch in her voice.
You're going to be brave and not cry.
It was all Christy Lynn could do not to turn away. But she needed to be brave, too, as much for Retta's sake as for Iris's. And it was only temporary, she reminded herself. In 3 weeks, Retta would be with them in Sweetwater, living just a few miles away, a welcome addition to her rapidly growing family. In the meantime, she'd be fumbling her way through motherhood with zero advance training, not that motherhood ever came with an instruction manual. According to Missy, you learned to be a mother by being a mother, one skinned knee and juice spill at a time. She prayed it was true.
Let's make sure you're good and warm, Retta was saying, as she zipped Iris into her jacket. And then it's time to get in the car.
I'll take the bags out, Wade said, grabbing the suitcases and heading for the door.
Christy Lynn watched him go, feeling suddenly bereft. He was giving her a few moments with Retta, to say whatever needed saying. But what was there to say at this bittersweet moment that hadn't already been said over the past weeks and months?
Iris, Retta said evenly, stooping down with arms extended. Come say goodbye to Nani.
Iris melted into Retta's arms, her violet eyes brimming as her great-grandmother pressed one last fierce kiss to her cheek, then handed her off to Christy Lynn.
Take care of each other, she whispered brokenly.
Christy Lynn stifled a gasp as Iris landed in her arms. The sudden weight of her, warm and slight and already clinging, was sobering.
It would be so much easier if you were coming with us today, Retta,
For Iris and for me.
Retta forced a smile. Easier isn't always best.
What if there's something I need to know? Like how she likes her oatmeal, or what vitamins I'm supposed to buy?
We've talked about all that, Christy Lynn. And if there's something we missed, there's always the phone, though I doubt you'll need it. Aside from the nightmares, she's an easy child, and I expect those will stop soon. She just needs to feel safe, and she will with you. You'll see. Now get gone. You've got a long drive.
You're not coming out to the car with us? Retta closed her eyes, throat bobbing convulsively.
I don't think I can. I know I'll see her in a few weeks, but we've never been apart, and it's hard. Just know how grateful I am to you. Everything changed the day you knocked on my door.
Christy Lynn blinked back tears of her own as she pressed a kiss to Retta's cheek.
It's me who should be grateful. We're family now, and that's something I've never had.
Retta reached into her pocket, fishing out a tissue.
Stop that talk, or you'll really have me blubbering. Now go on. I've got packing to do, and you've got a little girl to get home.
Iris clung to Christy Lynn's neck, propped on one hip as they stepped off the porch and out into the bright afternoon sunshine. Wade was waiting, the back door of the Rover thrown open, ready to buckle Iris into her car seat. Christy Lynn met his gaze as she handed Iris over, grateful for the unspoken reassurance she saw there. She was going to be fine. They were going to be fine. And in that moment, perhaps for the first time, she knew it was true. She glanced back at the house as Wade turned the Rover toward home, recalling Retta's words of gratitude.
Everything changed the day you knocked on my door.
The thought brought an unexpected sting to the backs of her lids.
Everything had changed for her, too.
Epilogue. Iris sat wide-eyed on the edge of the pink princess bed, sparkly sneakers drumming rhythmically against the dust ruffle. Christy Lynn eased down beside her, a small velvet box tied with a silver ribbon in her lap. Poor thing. She still looked a bit shell-shocked, as if afraid this new world might evaporate at any moment. And why shouldn't she be afraid, when she'd just been whisked away from everything she'd ever known? If anyone knew what that felt like, it was Christy Lynn. But she also knew she could change that for Iris, and she would. Wade stood watching from the doorway, a shoulder pressed against the jamb. He smiled as Christy Lynn caught his eye, shooting her a wink that sent a ripple of warmth and gratitude through her. She hadn't expected to feel nervous, but then she never expected to be sitting in a pink bedroom with a 3-year-old gazing up at her.
I have a present for you, Iris, she said softly, holding out the box.
Iris continued to stare, her violet eyes wide pools of uncertainty.
Would you like me to open it for you?
Iris nodded, then ducked her head, as if suddenly shy. Christy Lynn's hands shook as she tugged the ribbon free, then lifted the lid of the box. Iris's eyes shot even wider as she caught a glimpse of what lay inside. A pair of silver necklaces that, when fitted together, formed a single shiny heart. But a crease suddenly appeared between her pale brows, her gaze shifting from the box to Christy Lynn.
It's broken.
Oh no, baby. Look.
Christy Lynn lifted out both necklaces, placing them side by side in her palm.
They're part of the same thing. Two pieces of the same heart. There's one for you, and one for me. I'll put yours on if you hold up your hair.
Iris stared at the necklaces with a kind of wonder, then fumbled to rake her hair out of the way, holding very still as Christy Lynn snaked the silver chain around her neck and fastened it.
Good girl. Now I'll do mine.
On cue, Wade stepped in, taking the remaining necklace from her hand. After several failed attempts, he finally managed to clasp it. Christy Lynn grinned at Iris, then pointed to the mirror over the dresser.
See?
We match. Iris gazed at her reflection with enormous eyes, mesmerized as she stroked the necklace at the base of her throat. After a moment, she turned to Christy Lynn.
Match.
Yes, you have one half and I have the other, because from now on, you're going to be a part of my heart, and I hope that one day I'll be a part of yours. Iris seemed to weigh what this might mean, her little brow puckered. Finally, she cocked her head to one side, regarding Christy Lynn quizzically.
Are you my mama now? My real mama?
Christy Lynn blinked down at her, not sure how to answer, or if she'd even be able to find her voice. Would you like that? Iris nodded, but her tiny face was clouded with questions.
Will you still be my angel if you're my mama? Nani says, God sent you to take care of me.
Christy Lynn couldn't help thinking of the dreams that had once plagued her almost nightly. Dreams that hadn't returned since she agreed to take Iris, and wondered if Retta had been mistaken. I think Nani got it backwards, sweetie. I think I'm the one who needed taking care of, and now here you are, my own little angel, just like a dream. There was no warning, no time to brace for impact before Iris launched herself full force into Christy Lynn, clinging so tightly that it was impossible to say who was hanging on to whom. But suddenly it didn't matter. Suddenly, it felt like the most natural thing in the world, as if this child had somehow always been a part of her life. Peering over Iris's blonde head, she found Wade again in the doorway, her heart full as their eyes locked. She'd been living with nevers for far too long, holding happiness at bay with both hands. But now there was Iris, and Wade. It seemed never had come after all. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of When Never Comes by Barbara Davis, performed by Shannon McManus. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc., all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliantaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.